You're listening to episode 31 of the Mad Chatters Podcast, April 29th, 2015.
Most everyone's mad here.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mad Chatters Podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. I am your host, Derek, and I'm joined by my fellow hosts, Matt.
Hola.
I was going to say, that is your introduction to say something.
Well, you threw me off. You call me Matt. You always call me Matthew.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
And Jer.
I was hiding under your porch because I love you.
All righty then. Today,
what is that?
What is that?
It's up.
That's the only movie with a porch I could think of.
And also me in my normal life.
Yeah, of course, of course. Today we're going to be talking about something that we've wanted to talk about for a while, but we just didn't know quite how to address it, and that is My Magic Plus, which is something that is fairly new to the parks, but has completely revolutionized how. You go about vacationing at the parks. And the reason we're going to talk about it now is an article that was just released talking about the history of the bands and what they are going to look like going forward. So we're going to talk about that a little later. A little disclaimer, for those of you who think the Disney company is all rainbows and pixie dust and they always get along and nothing ever goes wrong, this will be a little shocking perhaps, so I just want to warn you ahead of time. We're going to be talking about how Disney sometimes does get into arguments and sometimes does get a little worried that things won't work out as they had hoped. But that's a little later. First, on the lighthearted side, we're going to do another round of the good, the bad, and the ugly. And Jeremy, why don't you remind us what this segment is all about?
The good, bad, and the ugly is when we go around the table and we pick a portion of the park or a portion of the resorts and we talk about what we think Disney has done very good in that space. Then we use the term bad, but we don't mean bad as in bad, but we mean bad as in could be improved. It's sort of like purgatory. Yeah. Not bad, not good, just kind of eh. And then ugly, which is ugly.
Purgatory's pretty bad.
Oh, is it?
So I hear.
I've never been there.
All the people who've experienced it have come back and told you how bad it is.
Yes. They write books. No, they don't write books.
So we're going to start. Today our good, bad, and the ugly is on Epcot East. Is that what we determined it is? Or is it Epcot West?
I don't really know. If you're looking at a map, if the map is really laid out northeast, southwest, then it's west. But if the map is just laid out like, here you are, here's what it looks like, then I don't know.
But we're going to be in the World Showcase, so picture the World Showcase, and we're going to start the section that we're calling West is Mexico through Italy. So that includes the countries Mexico, Norway, China, Germany, Italy.
And the whole continent of Africa.
And the whole continent of Africa there.
Squeezed in between.
Lest we forget. So let's start with the good.
I'll start. Okay. This was easy for me because I love this space and all of Disney World. It's one of my favorites. And that is, in general, just the interior of the Mexico Pavilion. I love that you, no matter what time of day it is, you walk in and it's nighttime. All of a sudden, it's dark. Well lit makes it sound like it's very bright, but I mean like the lighting is very well done in it because it gives you almost like this romantic, quiet, calm feel. You see the giant volcano in front of you, the stars above it, even like the river going around it creates this whole atmosphere of just being like this quaint little vacation spot that you've gone to and you're enjoying a nice night. And then even the way the tables are set up in the restaurant makes you feel like you're secluded because you have to go downstairs a little bit. I just love just walking in, maybe go past, once you get past the like merchandise section. But beyond that, I just, everything about it, I could just sit there and enjoy it.
Now, do you know why it is dusk in there?
Because that's much better.
Well, true. Yep. But also because in Mexican culture,
it's always dark?
always dark.
There is no sun there.
Fun fact. No, in Mexican culture, the dusk, or the time when the sun sets, is the time when family and friends gather together and enjoy one another's company.
Hmm. Thank you, Jeremy.
I need like a, I think we need like a sound effect. That's ding, like every time I give a fun fact, it'd be like, thanks, Mr. Know-It-All, or something like that.
Fun fact with Jeremy. Like
yes, just something that'll
jingle.
Be, my good is the front of the China Pavilion, particularly when you stand in the archway that's out there
gate.
And you look towards the theater entrance. Not so much towards the restaurant shop entrance, but towards the theater where you have the koi ponds mm-hmm. with the water plants, and then the beautiful architecture and the coloring there.
Do you know what that building is called?
The Taikangua.
Of course, in our endless assault on the Asian people. It's the Temple of Heaven.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, a replication of a big Buddhist temple. So, ha ha!
Oh, there we go.
Fun fact from Matthew.
Fun fact from Matthew.
But I just think it's a nice, it almost looks very postcardish when you look at it.
Yeah.
The way that the colors pop and it's just laid out so beautifully and eloquently. And if there weren't thousands of people walking by you all the time through there or the acrobat show, you could almost like sit on a bench and just enjoy that area for a long time.
Ooh, with a peach oolong bubble tea.
Ooh, yes, and a good book and Mushu. Tickling your toes. I don't know.
What?
Yes, that makes everything better.
I don't know what that means.
It might even be a Kodak picture spot or a Nikon, whatever it is nowadays.
Whoever's sponsoring, yeah.
Yeah, imagine that. My good is also from Mexico. I was going to just say Mexico in general because I love that whole pavilion from the outside to the inside. But I've actually narrowed it down, and quite surprisingly, probably for you two, because I complain about this attraction so often. But the more I have thought about it and grown attached to the music, I have come to love the Grand Fiesta Tour.
Ooh.
Starring the three caballeros. Or as my wife calls them, the dos caballeros. Which is neither the correct number, nor... she'll have to come on and sing her version of the song. It dos caballeros and then something about feathers, and it's quite funny. But the Grand Fiesta Tour, and really only because of the song... And I love Donald Duck, and I really like that first portion of the ride. As Derek was saying, there's a little waterway beside the restaurant, and the boat ride actually goes through that waterway, past some of the seating for the restaurant. You get to see the pyramid up close and the volcanoes in the distance, and it's very peaceful for about 3 minutes before the main attraction starts with the singing and all. So I like that whole thing. It's very good.
Do you think?
Nope.
Okay, in Disneyland, they have the Blue Bayou restaurant where you see the first maybe minute of Pirates of the Caribbean as they go by. Do you think Mexico was like Disney's kind of way of recreating that in Disney
World?
Oh,
I'm sure. It's too similar. I mean,
it
it's the same type of ride, that boat. You know, there's a little channel. It's outside, seemingly. Yeah. I think it was certainly inspired by it.
Yeah.
I think my favorite part of that portion is how you see the smoke. Is it the smoke?
Coming out of the volcano.
The volcano.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember if it was smoke or a cloud.
No, it's nice.
Yeah.
Mm. My favorite part is the big, there's like a big statue head right before you go into the tunnel where the attraction starts. There's this big statue head that's kind of partially covered with water, and it's kind of lit from the bottom of the water. I don't know why. I'd like that little statue.
Hmm. It would only be better as if they, every time the boat goes by, if a human head were to roll down the stairs and kind of splash.
Yeah, we said that last time.
Yeah.
That'd
be beautiful.
In ancient Mexico.
Y'all are terrible.
It's true.
Yeah. We just report the facts.
Some guy at the top holding like a heart.
What was that movie, Apocalypto?
Apocalypto.
There you go.
Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of Mel Gibson, let's get to the bad.
Oh.
Take that, Mel Gibson.
Oh.
I hope he doesn't listen.
Nope.
Well, remember, bad is, it's okay, but it could be improved. So, right. Derek, what was your bad?
Okay, mine is Beer Garden, but something very specific. Because I have to say, I really, really liked Beer Garden when we went, much more than even I thought I would, and maybe even more than you two did. This is the buffet restaurant in...
I doubt you liked it more than I did.
Oh, you think? Okay, good. See, I didn't know how you guys felt about it. I wasn't quite sure. It is literally a sausage fest, but it is so good, and I really enjoyed everything I had, even though it's a buffet, which I know sometimes buffets get a bad rap. But anyway, my bad is the way you're seated at Beer Garden.
Yes,
it's not family style. It's kind of like, it's not picnic tables at all. I don't know why I was about to say that, but it is kind of in the sense that it's a long row and no one sits in between. You're all facing each other all the way down this row.
Well, it's to recreate that whole idea. Right? Because they actually do that in Germany when they have these.
Well, that's what they say, but I've never heard that except outside of Disney. So I'm wondering if that's just like their cop-out.
No, you know, like on European vacation.
It's like, oh, everybody sits together in Germany, all have to sit together.
You ever seen European Vacation?
Yeah, it's been a while.
And they all sit together like that, and he gets in the fight and everything.
Well, the worst thing is, when we went, I don't even know if it was half full, and they sat us at a table with people who are already there. And it's like, no, there are so many empty tables. Like, I get sitting like that if there's no other choice. Like, it could be kind of a fun. It's full. Everybody's cheering and, I don't know, giving cheers with their beers and listening to the music. I can kind of see that. But when there was absolutely no need to seat us there, it just seemed very strange. That's the one thing I wish they would change. They never will, because that's, like you said, Jeremy, that's part of the charm of the whole restaurant. But for me, I would rather just enjoy the group I came with and not new people.
Well, and it's awkward, too. Like, the last time I was there was with our faithful listeners and friends, Eddie and Michelle, and their two boys. So the four of them, so there was five of us. And table was kind of like two tables of four pushed together. Think of it that way. And so those four were at a table, and then I was the fifth odd man out. And so I'm at the other table. Even though it's right there, I'm still at this other table with three strangers staring at a guy across from me who's a stranger. And it's just kind of...
You're supposed to talk. I'm just picking. Yeah.
He didn't look very
friendly.
Don't
want to do that when you're trying to eat with your people, have fun with your family.
And then you want to act a fool to the music, and then you're kind of like, well, this guy across from me is judging me, so I don't think I should.
Yeah.
Can I just jump right in here? I'm going to take Jeremy's place here just for a second, because I'm astounded that our lists are matching up. My bad is also in Germany and at Beer Garden.
Oh.
But it is a
better not be that sausage.
it's a completely different experience, though. It is the outside area. And I encountered this the last time I went. Not the last time I went. The last time I ate at Summerfest, which is the outdoor quick service restaurant that's kind of tucked into the column of the inside. It's kind of hard to explain where it is. You wouldn't see it unless you knew where it was.
Yeah, it's like weird. It's like you would. It's because you never know it was there.
It's like in the support column of the building. Yeah, like you had to go around and go back.
And you're like, there's three people in a kitchen in there. Yeah. How does that work out?
Well, they serve, you know, hot dogs and sausages and pretzels and beer and stuff like that. So I was waiting in line to get a hot dog or something for my wife and I. And a lady says about the interior there, because there's a big mural of Germany. There's a banner that says something in German. And then you see the big door, the archway to go into Beer Garden. And she said, did this used to be a ride? And I thought, and I told her the whole thing, the whole spiel about, you know, it was going to be this Rhine River Expedition indoor boat dark ride. And this was going to be the loading place for it, with the mural and the doors and the entrance all set up for that. There's a big show building back there. But, you know, they ran out of money and they just made the first part of the restaurant, first part of the ride into a restaurant, which is why you have that elaborate outdoor seating, viewing area thing. So I'm going to say that whole thing there. Anytime when I'm in a place and it's like you see what could be there, it's like the Japan thing from last time with the big entryway to that thing that ends up just being an anime crap exhibit thing. This is the same thing. It's like, oh, this is good because I love Beer Garden and I love that little restaurant. But at the same time, we could have a Germany Rhine River Expedition boat ride there, you know.
It's true.
For my bad, I have a two-part bad.
Nope.
So I'm going to break the rules. But they're bad for different reasons. And the first reason is for aesthetics. And that is, I hate the waterfront in China. So the, you know, when you're looking towards the lagoon, how they have that like rock work and all that. I just think that looks so tacky and so much like a zoo. Like, you know, you like the artificial rocks and the elephant exhibit at the zoo kind of a thing. And why they put that there when you could have so much more viewing spots for illuminations. Uh-huh. But I just think it's ugly and I don't like that.
I need to look at that.
There you go. Look at the rocks next time you're passing through China. My other bad, for a different reason, is the meet and greet in Mexico. And if you don't know, around the corner, like outside the pavilion, around the corner, Donald Duck meets in his sombrero and his poncho.
Oh, wait. What were you saying? Are you saying the character?
No. He's wearing a poncho.
Isn't there a poncho, though?
It's Panchito.
Oh. Never mind. Yeah.
But that's my bad, is why don't they have all three caballeros out there?
Or the dos caballeros.
Or the dos caballeros as well.
Yeah.
Whatever. But there's no reason why Panchito and Jose could not be out there in that meet and greet with Donald Duck as a lover of characters.
It's kind of racist, isn't it?
It really is, because Donald's not even Mexican.
No.
And Jose's not either, but he should be out there. Jose and Panchito.
Yeah. They're in the ride.
They're in the ride, but it just doesn't make sense to me to have only Donald there. Mm-hmm. When you have the space and the capability of having all three.
Now, wait. I have seen pictures of all of them there. Is that like a certain time of the year?
Yes. The last time they did it was, you remember when they did a couple years ago, or maybe it was last year, when they did every week was a different celebration?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Limited time magic?
Yeah. More like limited time crap.
Yeah, limited.
It was very, very limited time. The week we were there, they had a special ornament they were selling at one of the stores across Disney World.
Like, that was it. Mm. But the one that you're thinking of was Cinco de Mayo. They had the time magic was you can meet all three. But there's no reason why they couldn't have all three of the caballeros out there, except for, I guess, they're just too cheap to pay two extra people to be out there. But that's my whole beef with Disney as well, is I'm all about the core characters are great, but there's no reason not to bring out some limited characters.
Listen, all those people who are running Maelstrom have got plenty of time on their hands to go dress up as the other caballeros.
Child, they done shipped them back to Norway.
Yep.
They are gone. Green back card to Norway. Revoked.
Yes. Aww. Go back to Oslo. Ugly.
I thought Oslo's
ugly. I don't know.
I've never been
there. I doubt it.
So what in the World Showcase, Derek, do you think is just atrocious and needs to get out?
Okay, I've mentioned this before, but mine is specifically the merchandise in Norway. Is that what you thought I was going to say?
No, okay. Way off.
Okay, and specifically, even more specifically, the clothing merchandise in Norway is just atrocious. And they have way too much of it. And the reason I hate it is because it is generic cold weather clothing, like parkas and coats and those really ugly sweaters that cost literally $200. That is not just like a number I'm throwing
They're
out there.
They're like hand threaded from the beards of Scandinavian mountain goats.
And trolls.
Oh, Vikings. Yeah.
No, you say $200. No, they're like $300 and $400.
Oh, well, excuse me.
Like, I was walking through there one time and there was actually something that looked decent. And I said, oh, I wonder how much that is. And I flipped it over. It was $350 for like a shirt. And
you
I was like,
you have to pay for it to be pretty.
I guess so.
Well, it's 95 degrees with 80% humidity. Who's like, I really need that $300 parka right now for the next time I go to the snow-capped mountains of Norway?
Well, if you're going like up to back home to Canada.
No, still. Give me a t-shirt with a picture of that troll that's in the gift shop that says Norway Pavilion or something. I would buy that. I'm not going to buy a $400 sweater.
Yeah, no, I get it. I think it goes back to this weird thing, and maybe one of these days we should all research and do a show on Disney merchandise and shops throughout the years. Because it goes back to like Disneyland in the 1950s when it first opened, and they had the potted plant shop and the piano shop, you know,
organ store.
Who's gonna go to Disneyland to buy an organ?
Well, now.
Well, even then, I mean, who would go there specifically?
I bet you they sold a bit of organs.
Maybe. like a potted plant. Like, what kid wants a potted plant as a souvenir? Yeah, yes.
Well, my favorite is beside the clothing, they have pictures of models wearing them, very like Abercrombie and Fitch. It's like, okay, come on. We're in Disney World. Let's tone that down.
What I'm assuming is probably the same thing that happens in Japan, where you have an outside vendor that is using that space, because it's nothing Disney-esque about that. And now it's in the back half of the shop, and pretty much the whole back half has been taken over by that. So, and I would like to sit there one day and watch actually how many people purchase things as well, because I can't imagine their sales are too high. Okay, whose turn is it for Ugly? Matt's?
Sure.
I went out of turn last time, so if you want to do
that. Well, I can see your paper from here, and we have the same thing, so why don't you say it? And this is what I thought we all three would put.
The ugly, the correct answer is African Outpost.
Oh.
The whole thing.
Yeah, that whole thing. And I appreciate the thought. No, I don't. I don't even appreciate the thought. I don't know why it's there. Like, when did they think, this has kind of got some, we need some space here. It was after Animal Kingdom opened. I know it was after that. I think it was when the Millennium came along. I think it was actually when the Millennium came and they did that Tapestry of Dreams or Tapestry of Nations parade, and it had that little African vibe to it.
So, like, we need something African.
We need something Africa over here. If I was a citizen of an African nation, I would be deeply offended by... I mean, Animal Kingdom has the whole African continent thing.
Yeah, but especially, one, you have Morocco, which is in Africa. A lot of people don't realize that. So Africa is represented. But to me, nothing about it screams African except they put up some dark wood and like a thatch roof and put a couple of drums.
There's some drums out there because...
But then you have like a Coca-Cola truck parked under there. And then they used to sell like... well, they still sell some African art and knickknacks and things. But right next to it, you have all the generic Epcot merchandise there as well. So it really doesn't scream Africa in a sense. And if it does, it's almost in an offensive way. It's
if
like,
there was, I mean, you got prime real estate. Anywhere on World Showcase Lagoon is prime real estate, you know, and for future park planning. And I know they could tear it down anytime and build something, but it seems like as long as it's there, they're not, you know, so... It's just kind of like one of those things you look at and it's awful and it's just a space filler that they threw up to have something there that could be the presence of another nation and another restaurant.
Well, they say that there's room for 9 more countries in the World Showcase. So, and definitely that spot there between
China
and Germany. You probably could fit 3 or 4 right there.
Well, you got the waterway too, the lagoon.
Oh, that's true. But still, you could really squeeze them in there.
The lagoon, the little roadway to the lagoon.
Yeah, it's interesting how 1988 was when Norway went in, and that was the last country that we have gotten at the World Showcase.
Unacceptable. Yeah. It's as old as I am.
Yeah, I mean, you think about all the different cultures and all the different things in the world that are interesting and unique and different. It's time to change it up a little bit. Add something to the World Showcase.
Yeah, hopefully they'll listen to our podcast and take these tips.
They always do.
Africa. I mean, something from Africa that's not offensive.
Yep.
It's like, oh, well, we need to sell sodas here. Let's make it Africa.
They have Coca-Cola trucks.
All right, let's get to it. The article in question that's all about My Magic Plus is on Fast Company magazine. We found it online, and it was written by Austin Carr, and it is called The Messy Business of Reinventing Happiness: Inside Disney's Radical Plan to Modernize Its Cherished Theme Parks. Now, this whole article goes back all the way to the beginning of when My Magic Plus began when they decided to incorporate this new idea into Disney World, and it goes all the way to the present, and he kind of poses the question, have they succeeded where they wanted to go? So I'm going to kind of read his quote of what he wants to accomplish in this article, and then we're going to discuss it. He says, it's based on extensive interviews with dozens of current and former executives, employees, and outside partners involved with the development of My Magic Plus. Most would speak only on the condition of anonymity due to non-disclosure agreements, and also because, as one source explains, you don't mess with the mouse. It is a tale of corporate politics, personal feuds, and turf wars, but it is also the story of a success, even though the project didn't fully deliver on its massive ambitions. This is what happens when a huge corporation tries to invent itself. Okay, so Matt, I want you to explain to the maybe few people who don't really know what My Magic Plus is and what exactly it means that they tried to reinvent themselves. Why don't you, since you've used it many, many times on your trips, talk about what it does now when you go to the parks and you have My Magic Plus.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to define in a standard definition because it is all-encompassing. So that is why, you know, this whole idea is reinventing happiness, reinventing the whole vacation, Disney vacation experience, at least here in Florida at Walt Disney World. And it's all-encompassing on, I'm just going to say, we'll say four main aspects. One is that it is your access to your room. Well, first of all, when we talk about My Magic Plus, we're talking about the inclusion and the use of what's called RFID technology. And that stands for Radio Frequency Identification. And they use a small chip-like device, usually put in what we're going to talk about is bracelets. They also use them in their cups now. A lot of companies use them in credit cards and things like that. And it's basically just a touch, or not even a touch, but it's a radio frequency that sends off a signal that's received by something else that does all sorts of things. So now, four ways that Disney uses it is for entrance to your hotel room. Or maybe entrance to the pool area. And Disney has included them, at least in this massive overhaul, in what's called Magic Bands. And those are little bracelets. You might see them on TV, or if you just Google, you know, Magic Bands. They're little bracelets that kind of look like... they always reminded me of, like, those old snap bracelets got, like, Vacation Bible School. But they're solid. They're more rubbery and water-resistant and all that stuff. And they have a little Mickey head on them that has become the icon for the whole thing. And all you do is wear these. And so to get in your room, for instance, you tap them on the Mickey icon. To get into the pool area or outside or into the laundry room, you tap your bracelet onto that little Mickey head. A next way they use them is for payment. For like dining or anywhere to pay if you have a credit card on file with it when you've registered your stuff and you put a credit card as if you were going to have a credit card on tab with the hotel anyway, it's the same thing. That is now linked to that armband. So anywhere you go, whether it's purchasing food or purchasing merchandise, you use it, you just go up to the place and you...
Mickey to Mickey.
And you have to put in a personal identification pin when you use it to purchase things with, but it makes it very much it makes it very easier. It makes it very much more
much
convenient.
Easier.
Much more easier
to purchase things and to spend money. A third aspect is simply park entrance. No longer do you have turnstiles and the ticket things in which you insert a paper or a card ticket and it goes in one end and comes out the other. You simply have a post with the Mickey head on it. You touch Mickey to Mickey and it turns green. You put your finger there and then you are entering the park. There are no turnstiles whatsoever. And then lastly, and probably most significantly, is the replacement of the old traditional FastPass with the new FastPass Plus system. Yeah. And that simply is... Yeah, the traditional FastPass, they had them at all the major attractions. You just went up with your park ticket, put the ticket in, and then it would spit out a paper FastPass for you telling you what time to come back. And it was unlimited use all day long as you didn't have one, you know, you were waiting on. So how that's been replaced is you're able to make these ahead of time, and then you show up at the attraction at your given time, tap the Mickey head to the Mickey head, and there's your FastPass. And there's been a lot of changes that have come with that, too, but I'm sure we'll cover those. But that's the main introduction to what My Magic Plus is, and it is all-encompassing vacation game changer.
That's right. It is still very new, but at the same time, it feels old in the sense that we've been talking about it for years and years because they're still, even today, working out little kinks. So what this author did was he went all the way back to the beginning of it. And so what I'm going to do is kind of, it's a very long article. Obviously, we will post it in show notes if you want to read the whole thing. It's very well done. He even cites high-ups like Tom Staggs as references. So I feel like he definitely knows what he's talking about, and it's not made up. Right. You know, sometimes you just don't know who to trust. But I feel like this did enough research to where we can trust it. So I'm just going to get as short of a synopsis as I can. And let's start at the beginning, the very best place to start. He talks about in the mid-2000s, Disney Company was worried that they were failing to meet the so-called next generation. They thought the ticketing system had become too complex, and they wanted to, quote, reinvent the vacation experience and keep Disney World relevant. So they called it this next generation experience, NGE. And in 2008 is when they officially began the work on all this. And this was very new territory for Disney Parks. I love this quote because it kind of describes Disney in a lot of things we've talked about in past podcasts. He says, the rest of Disney is younger, more progressive. The rest of Disney, as in like movies, cruise line, all that kind of stuff, is younger, more progressive, risk takers. But parks and resorts is not, explains one former high-level company leader with strong ties to the Next Generation project. Quote, it's built to be industrial and resilient for consistency and volume. It's not built for change. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's how multiple company sources describe the Parks and Resorts Division's ethos. Ethos. What's that word?
Ethos.
Ethos. Which I thought is such a good description, because we always talk about things like Epcot or Hollywood Studios where it's like, why is that thing still there? You know?
Yeah.
And so this was, to be able to do something on this big of a scale that would change the entire vacation experience was saying something for the Parks and Resorts division, for sure. Okay, so this was the original plan for the Magic Band. And the more ideas they added to what it would look like, the more companies they had to bring in to help with development, which is why it racked up these huge costs.
But $1 billion, right?
Right, which he actually used that number, which I've always heard it, but of course Disney would never confirm something like that. But yeah, the fact that he said it in this article, I'm like, okay, so it really was nearly $1 billion. Not that I'm surprised, but it's just like,
right,
wow, that's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And so now you know why park tickets increased in price twice over the last year. But anyway, so they wanted to first help optimize flow by tracking guests. And one thing I thought was funny, that when they first talked about doing this, they said, if we know where guests are, then if like all of the guests are bubbling up in this one area, we can just add some characters right around the corner so that way they have someplace to go and it kind of disperses them. Have you guys seen anything like that happen?
Not really.
Okay.
No, but in all of this, I think, yeah, you're right. It's been going on since 2008 in embryonic forms. I remember the first kind of like, I guess the first, do you all remember when they started doing the testing, the new entrance at Epcot?
Oh, no.
It was on again, off again. They were testing the middle Mickey head turnstiles we're used to now, not turnstiles, but the posts that we're used to now that are everywhere at the entrance to the parks. Entrance to the parks. They were testing those at Epcot off and on, maybe 2009, 2010-ish. And there was just one section of entry stalls that was those, and you would tap your ticket to it. Not a bracelet yet, but just the ticket, just testing it out. But I think it's important to remember in all this, was it the author of this article that you were just saying said that it didn't live up to all the original promises?
Near the end, yeah, he talked about a few specific things that they promised that he says, well, I don't really see that yet. But he's not a very pessimistic author. Like, we'll see that near the end.
Yeah, I'm going to say, yeah, I would add a big ol' yet to the end of all of this stuff. So, yeah, I haven't seen what you're just talking about with, you know, trying, you know, staying like, what's the word I'm looking for? On demand, what's the word? Like, happening right now. Real-time responses to where guests are. I haven't necessarily seen that yet.
Yeah, so but it's definitely possible, because with these bands, you can tell where all the guests are in your park at a given moment.
Well, you can tell where they're supposed to be. I think, like, if you know they're supposed to be at Pirates of the Caribbean, or you see a lot of fast passes for this, it doesn't necessarily mean people are using them.
I think, though, what the article is alluding to is that they were planning on having sensors throughout the whole park that would pick you up, not just where your fast passes.
They do, don't they?
That I'm not sure.
Because you're supposed to be able to find lost children and all these things.
I mean, I would think it'd be the same technology that's used in Find My Phone or whatever. You can just see where everybody is, I would think.
Well, if you think about the rides now that take your picture.
That's true.
And put them on your account without tapping anything.
Yeah.
True.
Touching anything.
It's funny to me when this first came out as well, the announcements, a lot of people were freaking out about the Big Brother aspect.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, listen, if you are really concerned about that, why are you even on the internet? Because that's enough right there that people can know where you are and track you in Facebook and your cell phone and all these kind of things.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
Disney is not tracking you anywhere except in their parks, as far as we know.
Yeah, I never got that. I never got that fear either, but it was surprising how many people expressed that. Yeah.
Well, because I think there's just this thought that, like, I don't want Disney to know what I'm doing, and it's like, well, you're on their property.
Like, what are you? What are you going to? I mean, well, what are they going to do?
Yeah,
I mean, stalked by Mickey Mouse or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Buy this now. Walking around with a merchandise cart.
Well, besides trying to optimize flow, there were a few. There are several other things that they presented to, like, the board, you know, in saying this is what we want to do. They wanted to help guests make it easier to pay, which Matt said they're doing well. They want to do the Fast Pass Plus, which they've also done. They wanted to have a new dining experience where you kind of order ahead of time and then they know where you're sitting. They can bring it to you. They were able to do that with the Be Our Guest restaurant. So some of these things they've carried through with. Another thing I remember them really pushing when they first announced it was being able to have more personal interaction with the characters and the guests. So, like, if it was your birthday, you know, they could say, oh, hey, it's this kid's birthday. I can tell because it's, you know, linked into his band or whatever. So let me wish him a happy birthday right off. I don't know if they've done that, but...
No, they have. And I don't remember if it was one of you telling me the story of being with someone. Because when you go on there now, if you say when you're planning your vacation, they ask you if there's any special events coming up when you're on your vacation, like anniversaries, birthdays, and things. And, you know, for a while there, they were just doing the buttons. They might put, like, a card in your room or, like, a special little decoration with the towels or whatever. But now they're asking you really detailed. Like, if you say it's your birthday, it's like, who is it? Which band are they using? You have to select the person and tell them. And there have been stories, I think recorded instances at least, of the testing, especially with the Mickey Mouse at Town Square Theater, that can see, like, real-time updates, almost like a teleprompter. I think some... What was it? Was it you all or someone else?
Well, I was there for the Christmas party a couple years ago, and it was right when they were doing the testing. So very limited number of bands were out. And I specifically remember when Santa Claus came through in the parade.
Uh-huh.
And he, of course, is mic'd and he was, oh, Merry Christmas. And then he would randomly be like, Merry Christmas, Matthew.
Oh.
And Merry Christmas, Derek. You know, and it was like, at first I thought he was just making up names, you know, kind of a thing. And like,
there's got to be a Derek somewhere in this crowd.
Well, that's pretty good, though. You could do that. Is it John? There's William?
Probably, Bob, Cindy.
Cindy.
But then some people I follow on Twitter... They tweeted a couple days later, Santa Claus said my name.
Yeah.
And they already had their bands. And again, this was when bands were
first
rolling
out. Oh, it's a Christmas miracle.
Yeah. And they were like freaking out. So that was something cool where it made it personal. Now, my only problem with that is everybody's got bands. So Santa Claus is going to have to be like, hello, Jimmy and Carol and Susie and Steve and Bob.
I thought I remember specifically hearing someone, and if this was you and it was on your podcast or something, you have to be listening, you can tell me, that it was someone's birthday, and they happened to be kind of, you know how when you're meeting Mickey, I think they let a couple parties into the room at once, and you're kind of standing there waiting on the next party to be done. They saw on the back, in some sort of telepromptery thing, that said birthday, and it had his name, and then the age... And I don't remember if that's what it was or not. But I've read stories of it happening.
Well, the story this author told was that there's a Spanish-speaking child who walked in, and Mickey immediately started speaking in Spanish. Like, I think he just said, hola.
Oh.
And then when they smiled for the picture, he said, queso. But the author asked the cast member nearby if that's the technology they were using. And the cast member admitted that it wasn't. They hadn't gotten there yet. But he did say what the secret was. And the author wrote that the secret is really, really cool. But the only reason the cast member told him was if he agreed not to publish it. So I was like, well, what is it? I want to know.
Mickey's just very astute. He's studying.
There's
languages.
Lots of racial profiling going on. In
I love
you. Just
Mickey,
don't know about it,
Mickey. You walk in and hola. I don't speak Spanish.
I'm from Detroit.
Anyway, okay. So these are all the ideas they wanted to do. Now, this was when people started to push back, especially Imagineers, which, as you know, Imagineers are the people involved with creating the new ideas for the parks and making sure it meets Walt's vision. Yeah.
Sorry, I just wanted to add, one of the other things that I heard initially was they were going to implement this in a lot of the attractions as well. Well, not a lot, but some of the attractions. And specifically, the one thing I remember talking about was how you would be able to, for like, It's a Small World, part of it would be at home before your trip, you would be able to create your own small world-like doll.
And
Doll.
Like a O. All.
Doll.
You said doll, like straight up doll.
Doll.
Create your own dowel rod, and then you attack the dolls with them.
Yeah, doll will be D-O-W.
Whatever. The Small World animatronic, and you would be able to create your own child, and you know, in different dress or whatever, and then link it to your Magic Band, and then at some portion of the ride, there would be screen seamlessly put into the scene, where your small word, I have a hard time talking. Your Small World doll.
Yeah, there you go. Doll. You got it, doll.
Why can't I say that word?
I don't know.
Maybe I had a stroke.
Missouri?
it would pop up on the screen.
Right.
And for your boat. And they were talking about even on Pirates, I remember something about special effects, again, that you could pre-program to happen specifically linked to your Magic Band.
You know who's been doing this for 20, like, 5 years?
Tell me.
Universal.
How so?
With E.T.?
Oh, you're right.
Yeah,
it's not RFID technology. It was in the cards, yeah. You know, that you scanned at the beginning.
How about the last time we went?
Francis. You said it without missing a beat.
I was like, Francis with a C or something. Or with an E. Francis with an I.
With such confidence. I mean, I about wet myself. I was laughing.
Francis. And then they didn't even do it. It didn't even work.
No.
Yeah. Like, bye, that's par for the course at Universal, though. So.
E.T. kind of sounds like an old smoker.
Yeah, he is. That's why he looks like that.
I can't.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, it's funny that you say that about the attractions, because the example he gave was Haunted Mansion. Let me backtrack for a second. Imagineers, like I said, they pushed back because, first of all, they're worried about all these outside companies coming in and their quote-unquote creativity, and they thought it was maybe gonna, you know, go against their own creativity. Other departments besides Imagineers pushed back because of the insane costs. They thought it was just getting too expensive. In fact, at this point, at February 2011, a board approved a budget of nearly $1 billion. So, as they're doing all this stuff, they decide to create this whole soundstage in Disney's Hollywood Studios that would have like a practice setup for every element involved with Magic Bands. So they had like a practice home where you see a package arrive and you see your Magic Bands. Then they had a practice hotel where you go in and you see how easy it is to check in with all this RFID stuff. And they set up this whole thing, and this would help kind of sell the idea to the board, but also to the Imagineers and also to the cast members who are worried. So they had it all set up. And one of the things they said they had set up was Haunted Mansion and how they were going to use the RFID in it. Now, they didn't say specifically how they would use it, but they talked about worries that maybe if you went by too fast, would it really pick up your RFID? So I do kind of wonder what they were planning to do inside Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, the only thing I can think is if they wanted to somehow enhance that final scene.
Yeah, the hitchhiking ghost.
That really, I mean, has some good technology already.
Absolutely.
Like the one where they can swap your faces with the person. I mean, that's kind of cool stuff, you know? So
maybe the person at the end could say, hurry back, Derek.
I heard the rumor, that's what I was going to say that, but it's similar. I heard a rumor, and this is just a rumor, and I could see it being kind of cool, but kind of eh. And that was some sort of, in that last, I can only say it would be in that last scene, some sort of death certificate prop that would be set up on like a pedestal
Very much like the book that's outside in the interactive queue that has like projected writing on it, except it looks real and cool, and that it would actually have
your name
and your co-writer's name that would suddenly be written on the death certificate as you went by.
Yeah,
that was a rumor, and it sounds like armchair imagineering to me, but it would be cool.
Hurry back,
and kind of scary.
Francis.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
Francis with an I.
Francis. I wonder what stage they used at Hollywood Studios.
Yeah, I don't know. They actually started at the Wonders of Life Pavilion, and then when they decided to create this whole setup of all the different areas, that's when they moved to an unused soundstage at DHS. I wonder if it was the one where the Frozen sing-along eventually moved into. I don't know. But
maybe that's why John Lasseter was there that day. He was going to see the RFID technology.
There you go, yeah. It's funny, the author talked a lot about...
You heard it here, folks, first... You heard it here first,
folks. First,
it's funny. The author talked a lot about Steve Jobs and how he was on the board, and he couldn't go to a lot of these meetings because he was already sick at the time. But he gave his full approval and encouraged him to keep going with it. But
this is all very much within the spirit of Disney. You know, Disney's whole thing. You know, the basic motto for Walt Disney: keep moving forward, and always doing new things and trying new things, and not being afraid to take big old risks, as everything successful Disney has ever done has been a huge, tremendous risk. I think this is more like a conclusion. I think as we begin to see this unravel more, you'll see that it's in the spirit of the Disney company to.
And going back to Steve Jobs, there is a huge similarity between the Magic Band idea and now what we are seeing with the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
As far as everything is available on your wrist.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see how when they first had the idea, it was like, yes, this is going to bring us into that next generation, that next millennium. Yeah. So, okay, bear with me. We're getting there. Okay, so not only did people start pushing back because of creativity issues and because of cost, but some people, like, feared for their jobs. I mean, you think about the people who work specifically with, like, paper tickets and things like that. Would Disney still need these people? I don't know. But they said that Tom Staggs, who was in charge, I forget his title at the time, head of Parks and Resorts maybe. But anyway, he really fostered collaboration and said, you know, we really need to all work together. And so that helped. But okay, this is kind of a long quote that I wanted to read, but I found it very funny. Okay, one of the leaders, Franklin, managed to get some teams to collaborate well on the project, but many described the internal politics as fierce. Sources who were present for early-in park tests of the My Magic Plus enhanced turnstile-free entrances recall how some Disney groups had cast members attempt to sneak past the gates in an attempt to prove the system wasn't secure enough. Others argue that this was actually a valid security test. But then other sources claim that during a test of whether long-range sensors at the Haunted Mansion could identify the magic bands worn by customers going by at high speeds, Imagineers purposely sat...
high speed Haunted Mansion, yes.
Imagineers purposely sat on their hands as the ride zoomed along to make it harder for the sensors to locate their bands. Of course, again, a spokesperson for Disney said, well, this was a valid test to make sure it did work. Multiple sources indicate the Imagineers were exploring their own alternative to the Magic Band, as were other teams. So basically, it sounds like the Imagineers were not totally on board with this
They're
project.
They're like a bunch of kindergartners.
Exactly.
Like, eh, I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
Now, those could be some valid tests, and those are valid concerns.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Every time I go through one of the new ticket stalls and, you know, scan my band and do the thing, you only have maybe one or two cast members per stall, and they're overseeing four scanners each on each stall. There's four, two on one side, two on the other, in like a V shape. And there's usually, at least at this point, as people are getting used to it, there's usually a lot of confusion, and one or both cast members are usually tied up trying to help someone learn how to scan their band and then put their finger on there, you know, like old people and stuff, or children, you know, they're trying to help them understand how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought somebody could probably just walk right through here. Now, I don't know what would happen if, like, a thing would go off, you know, someone's going by without scanning, but I don't want to try it. But I wonder if that's a valid concern. Surely they thought about that.
Yeah, well, they did. They tested it, and I guess
don't call me Shirley.
Well, the February 2012 deadline, which they had promised the board they'd be done by, it came and went. And there were many reasons, not only like the political things going on inside, but also, I mean, you had to replace 28,000 hotel door locks with this RFID technology. There were 283 park entry touch points that needed to be upgraded to these Mickey, you know, waist-high poles. They had to install more than 30 million square feet of Wi-Fi coverage, because you remember back in like 2008-ish, they added free Wi-Fi to the parks, and that was all setting up for this My Magic thing, which, you know, you need your phone to use and the Wi-Fi and all that kind of stuff. So that was all costly and took time.
They haven't had free Wi-Fi that long, even in the resorts.
I want to say it was our second or third trip when they added it. I might be wrong.
I remember them like testing in resorts, and then only, I feel like only in the last couple years, maybe 3 years, have they had it in the parks.
Maybe so.
I don't know, though. We don't do research.
It wasn't until January, it wasn't until January 7th, 2013, when Disney finally announced it to the public. And the author pointed out that one of their big promotions was that Scuttle in the queue for Little Mermaid would be able to interact with guests personally, and he quoted something like, "When I walked through, he was just like babbling nonsensically to all the people in the room." So they haven't quite got there yet.
Hey, yeah, I was gonna say he didn't interact with me personally, like, "Hey, Matthew," and I don't know if it's a cycle. It seemed really oddly timed. The last time I went with my wife, my parents, and stuff, and we all had our bands. When we walked into the first part of the indoor part of the queue where there's Scuttle, it's at the end of the whole crab thing, and it's where the crabs are all bringing the stuff by, and Scuttle's there, the animatronic, talking. As soon as we walked in the door, and this was walk-through queue at this time, nobody was there, so as soon as we walked through the door being empty, first people in the room, he perked up and was like, "Hey, welcome," or like, you know, whatever, and he started talking. So I wonder if there was a scanner that just sensed, but all that would have to be is a motion sensor, not really a...
The same technology that brings you the $5.99 ghost that goes for Halloween at Walgreens.
Yeah. Or the automatic doors at the Walgreens.
Oh, yeah. It's true. Okay, well, the author ends the article by saying he went to Disney, and so he talks about all the successes he found with this project. And he does give the caveat that there are still bugs, that they're still working out. Like, he saw several guests, you know, a cast member would have to come and help them out because the band wasn't lighting up. They said Mickey to Mickey, but it still didn't work.
Yeah.
But he talks about the fact that, A, people are spending more money. I mean, if you have a credit card linked up to your wrist, it's going to be a lot easier to spend money. Yeah. He said that the easy access really did help. He loved how it works on Test Track. Where you create your own car and have the line almost seem shorter for that. He loves the on-ride photo pass, where you kind of mentioned that, Matt, how you don't even have to do anything, but it takes your picture, and then knowing who you are because of your Magic Band, it sends the picture to your account online for you to look at later and perhaps purchase. And he said the Be Our Guest thing has worked really well. And again, Matt, you've talked about that on this show, how your quick service lunch came right to you and you didn't have to tell them where you were sitting or anything.
Right.
So he says, you know, he says overall, like, even though it's had a long journey to get here, overall it's worked. And the people who are worried that maybe, what was I going to say?
It wouldn't work.
No. The people who are worried that maybe they just made all these technological changes just for technology's sake, one of the people did have this quote. He said, "A big part of the company culture is trying to guard against dangerous change. If Disney had followed every trend in the past 60 years, it wouldn't be Disney anymore." So they're aware. They're not just doing this for the sake of adding technology. They hope it adds a good experience to your Disney vacation. So, which sends me to questions to you guys. Where do you think My Magic Plus, as it exists now, succeeds the most?
I think it succeeds in streamlining everything, making everything more, I don't know, just the very act of what you're doing and how much is tied into that little band is impressive to people. And I think that half of the battle is that, because now you go to Disney World to get in your room, you touch your wristband to the door.
Mm-hmm.
To get into the park, you touch your wristband there. To pay for things, you touch your wristband. to go do a fast pass, you touch your wristband, and that amazes. I mean, I'm not saying that people are stupid by and large, but it amazes people. Something that simple, you know, amazes people. So then you go from there, and let's say they're coming down to Disney World, and they're going to do a few days at Universal or SeaWorld or something, and they go there, and they get their paper ticket now. There, they have to, you know, slide it through. And at Universal, they still have the cast member, the team member has to like take your ticket from Universal, scan it on the barcode thing. And it really does kind of get the one up on them, as if, you know, now that just feels really dated. Mm-hmm. Once you've been to Disney and you've got your little band that does everything.
I'm going to give the counter opinion, because I don't go there. I haven't been to Disney World as far as a vacation, like for a week or whatever, staying on property in a couple of years now. But as a Florida resident who goes frequently, I haven't seen the tangible benefits of the Magic Bands yet in the park. As far as I still feel like, even though it's a different process to get into the park, it still takes just as long, because people have difficulties understanding Mickey to Mickey and the finger, you know, swiping and all that kind of thing. The Fast Pass system is totally wrecked.
Yeah.
Well, that was going to be my next question. What parts of it are not working? So you think the Fast Pass?
I think it has destroyed the Fast Pass system, and we've touched on this before, but I think the problem is, whereas spur of the moment Fast Passing in the park, it really was effective. Now, when you plan your Fast Passes, whether you want to or not, you're going to get 3 Fast Passes.
Yeah,
and then the system is tiered where,
and you can't. Yeah, the other parks where it's tiered, you can't get them for the major attractions.
Yeah,
you get to pick one.
So again, we've seen how, like, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Why don't you just break down how the Fast Pass system now works?
Well, the Fast Pass system now works by before I go. Or the day of, but usually mostly before you go.
180 days out, right?
Up to 180, I guess.
For non-annual pass holders, yeah. And non-Florida residents.
Yeah, but let's say Matt and I are going to the parks tomorrow. He goes on there and we're going to hit Magic Kingdom in the morning, Hollywood Studios in the afternoon. So he's gone on and picked out which attractions we're going to Fast Pass.
You can only do it one park per day.
Yes, so even though we're splitting our time, we only can do one park. And he went ahead and picked the 3 attractions that we're going to Fast Pass. Now, we honestly don't know if we're going to ride those.
Right.
But we felt like we had to, because, well, they're there, they're available, it's a Fast Pass.
And at every park but the Magic Kingdom, oh, and Animal Kingdom, at Epcot and Hollywood Studios, which both house the 2, I'm not going to say most popular, longest waited for attractions at Walt Disney World, Toy Story, Midway Mania at Hollywood Studios, and Soarin' at Epcot. Those 2 parks have a tier system that you're talking about.
Yes.
So when you make a Fast Pass at either one of those parks, the first tier category for Epcot includes Test Track and Soarin', and you can only choose one.
So you only get one of those for a Fast Pass. Where in the old days, you get your Soarin' Fast Pass first thing in the morning, and by the afternoon, you could get your Test Track Fast Pass. But my point is, you're fast-passing things that you don't want, which in a way takes it away from the people that do want it, and also makes the standby line longer. Because now, even though we weren't going to ride Journey into Imagination, well, we had the 3rd Fast Pass, and there was nothing else we wanted. Exactly. It's time for it, let's go.
Hollywood Studios is probably worse.
Yeah, what are you going to fast pass? I mean, you have Rock and Roller Coaster,
Fantasmic,
Tower
Rock and Roller Coaster, and Tower of Terror. No, Toy Story Mania, all in Tier 1.
Yeah.
Toy Story, Rock and Roller Coaster, Fantasmic, Advanced Seating, whatever. And then the second, and you can only pick one. So you have to choose between Rock and Roller Coaster or Toy Story. And they both get pretty long waits, and Toy Story obviously more. Second tier includes Tower of Terror, Star Tours, and so on. And then you pick 2. So, you know, if that's gone, they include like Great Movie Ride. The stupidest one is Voyage of the Little Mermaid.
Yes,
because
we did that
when we went in August, and all it did was get us into the actual pre-show waiting area with everyone else. And we didn't really bypass anything, so it was dumb.
Yeah, it was a good idea.
Well, I still think we're getting there.
Well, maybe
I think we're getting there. They got to, I mean, That's the kind of thing that takes years to work out.
Something that may, again, the old FastPass system, it worked. I just feel like it, I don't see the problem with the old system. It did work.
The thing that's different about this one that's better is that you don't have to, now that we can argue that too, you don't have to go from location to location at a park to get your FastPass. As you know, like used to, you go to Epcot, you'd have to get there at like rope drop if you hope to get a fast pass for Soarin'.
Yeah.
And then the way we always did it was go get a fast pass for Soarin', rush back over to Test Track and wait in standby, which, you know, by at 9 o'clock is going to be minimal. Then by the time that's over, you go back to Soarin'.
Yeah.
And you're good. So you don't have to do all that going around. You like go wait on your fast pass and put your ticket in. But at the same time, they probably could make a way for you to do it spontaneously on your phone,
yeah,
like an app, and take out all the advanced reservation business,
uh-huh,
and just do it the day of or the day before. I don't know.
Because, again, it goes back to that people feel like they have to get three.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever run into the problem where you have a fast pass for something and the line's super short and you're like, oh, I just wasted this fast pass?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I feel like that was one of the good things about the fast pass, the old fast pass system, is sometimes we would be like, let's go fast pass Rock and Roller Coaster, and it'd be a 10-minute wait. So it's like, well, let's just ride it. We'll go fast pass something else. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, the system's
too. The only place where it's I mean, it's pretty nice at the Magic Kingdom. I've never had any problem, even the day before, getting three fast passes for the three mountains. At Animal Kingdom, I've never had any problems, even the day before, getting three fast passes for Safari, Expedition Everest, and Dinosaur, or Cali River Rapids, or what have you. The only two really buggers about... can I say buggers? We have UK listeners.
I'll out.
I don't even know what it means. I just know it's kind of vulgar over there. Sorry. All right. The only place where it's a really big bother is Hollywood Studios and Epcot because of the tier system.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you feel like you waste them.
Yeah.
Because you end up... Yeah, I got... Oh, the Seas with Nemo and Friends is one of our
fast passes. Do they really have that as a fast pass?
Yes.
So, yeah.
Oh, my word.
Everything has a fast pass except... Ellen's Energy Adventure. Yeah, everything has a fast pass in Future World. Which, I mean, and one of the things that people said from the get-go is it's going to make, or one of the worries was that it was going to make standby lines longer for attractions that didn't have a fast pass before. And while they were saying that wouldn't happen, it has happened.
I've heard that the
Spaceship
Pirates,
Earth, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Pirates of the Caribbean line is always longer than it ever used to be.
Because there's that psychological thing when newcomers look at it and they're excited about their first Disney vacation and they're thinking, oh, that's a classic Pirates of the Caribbean. We've got to have a fast pass for that. That's very popular in their minds. That's going to have a really long wait in their minds. And so they make it. And I've never seen Pirates in years past, even after the redo, after a few months, of course, I don't ever remember Pirates being more than 15 minutes.
That's the number I was thinking as well.
But now, throughout the day, it's easily 35, 45 minutes for standby, waiting well outside into the courtyard area.
And I always fast pass hopscotch and ring toss on the Viking horns outside the Maelstrom.
Uh-huh.
Very popular fast pass.
Yes, yes.
That's a very good replacement for Maelstrom.
Yes. Nothing like hopscotch.
Maelstrom.
Well, I'll try to kind of wrap this all up. Did you guys have any more thoughts about what works, what doesn't? Where do you want to see this to go in the future?
I like where it is. Sorry, you went too long.
Go ahead.
I like where it is on the ticket side, on the room key side, on all those things that are. And I know what Jeremy was saying earlier about, you know, it's whatever he was something he countered me about something. I don't remember. But it's psychological to people that this is it just speaks next gen, futuristic, clean, you know, progress. It speaks that even if it doesn't work all the way quite yet. Because of what I was saying. Then you go to Universal, you go to your average theme park, and you're sliding the paper ticket, and that all, compared to this, that all seems very old school now. And so Disney wins in that category. Because you can be with people today, some of the families I know that have gone for the first time, Disney World first timers, since this has been a thing, love it. Absolutely love it. And they loved the FastPass system. They loved everything about everything with the My Magic Plus thing. The people that don't like it are people like us who have been before, who knew the old fast pass system, who knew how to get around the Magic Kingdom in like 6 hours.
I was about to say, and who's also been able to get 6+ fast passes in one day.
Yeah. We're the people that don't enjoy that part of it so much. And I still think there's no way that Disney is going to continue to have the system they have with adding fast passes. So if you don't know, you get 3 fast passes a day. Once you use those 3 that you've booked beforehand, you can book 1 more at a time, but you have to go to one of the pavilions in each park. And that's where it looks kind of cheap. So for instance, between Golden Horseshoe and the entrance to Frontierland, there's a little tunnel at the Magic Kingdom, and that's one of the stations. And you have a line halfway around the street there just waiting to add that 1 more fast pass. Which by that time, all of them are probably gone, except like teacups, Dumbo, you know, stuff that you don't want them for. Mm-hmm. And it's like little tabletops with iPads on them. I can't see Disney keeping that around as the permanent system.
Yeah, I would hope not. I think that the future looks bright for the Magic Bands. I was very skeptical, and I still have a healthy dose of skepticism, but I do think it is getting better. And I think that ultimately, making the experience more personal is going to be positive as long as it's not in an obtrusive way. Like, I was just thinking, it would be kind of nice to, if they can track, you know, let's just say they track where what you eat at different restaurants. And then maybe, you know, like on iTunes, how you can rate songs. You know, I go to, you know, Columbia Harbor House and I get whatever and I can give it 5 stars. And that's all my management. Then next time I go to Columbia Harbor House, whether it's a month from now or a year from now, I say, oh, I think I had something I liked here. And I'm able to look that up and remember what I liked or what I didn't like. So I can see that kind of stuff continuing to just make the trip ultimately more and more personal and unique to each person. Character interactions. The more that this comes about, hopefully we can get more of the characters who can talk and blink and yep. those kind of things, and it'd be a whole new generation of characters. I think that would be amazing as well. And I even like the idea of personalizations in the attractions. Again, not obtrusive, not something that sticks out in your face, but just little touches that just that Magic Band user can see or know, you know, specifically it's for them.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Well, what about when you enter your room? This might be creepy. What about when you enter your room, like, they know, like, I don't know, they obviously have your schedule and everything on file. They know when you're checking in or whatever. Maybe the day you check in, the first time you enter your room, you know, welcome, Price family, or whatever. And then your room, I don't know, there's like an audio spiel about you entering your room and all the conveniences that are available to you at your Disney resort and the transportation and all this stuff.
As you get up in the morning, you hear a voice that says, good morning, Mr. Smith.
Yes.
I know that you enjoy the toilet seat at 86.5 degrees. Yes. I've gone ahead and warmed that
exactly.
up for you.
Exactly.
You have a fast pass today for 10 o'clock at Big Thunder Mountain Railroad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be creepy when they start in the bathroom and in the sleeping areas.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, after talking about all this, just this week, Incom Corporation in California, did you hear this? That they're suing the Walt Disney Company, alleging that the theme park giant's attendance tracking and Magic Bands illegally use technology that this corporation developed.
I'm sure.
Yeah, they infringe on 3 patents that the company developed in 2008. Disney said this, the lawsuit is without merit and we will respond to it in court. In other words, suck it, you're going down.
Too bad, we're Disney.
Yeah, bring it, there you go. Yeah. So, all right, well, the jury is still out on the whole My Magic Plus, and we hope that more and more good things are to come. And if you guys, if you listeners...
Sorry, I was going to say, and to all the Disneyland snobs out there who say, oh, we don't have that Magic Band stuff. It's coming to you.
Yeah.
It's coming.
The author did actually address the Disneyland question. He said that one of his sources said...
Sorcerers.
What did they say?
One of the sorcerers said... he said that it's probably not going to go to Disneyland just because it would be way too expensive to transition all that old stuff. That sounds horrible, but you know what I mean. Like it's just a different time that Disneyland was built, and it would be way too expensive to transition that over to something like this. I don't know, but
Once they get the kinks out of it in Walt Disney World, and once it becomes a cash cow that they think it is, because I definitely see the benefits of. The buying merchandise, buying things, people definitely spend more money because it's like psychological. If you're not reaching in your wallet, it's not real money to you. So yeah, boop, you know, there you go. So it will come to Disneyland. It's just a question of when.
Yeah.
Well, that is the question. Well, listeners, if you have any opinions on My Magic Plus, why don't you send those our way? We'll be sure to read those, see if you agree or disagree.
If you are planning a Disney vacation soon, and maybe it's your first time, or maybe you're really nervous about the whole My Magic Plus system and how to use it and how to make your reservations, you can always contact us. We'll be happy to provide you any guidance necessary to make your Disney vacation the most magical it can be.
Just let us know what temperature you like the toilet seat so we can load them up.
Well, that is a great segue, not the toilet seat comment, but the comment, the contact us comment, because we have another listener email that we want to respond to. Jeremy, why don't you read that to us?
All right. This email comes from listener Terry, who's a faithful listener and a friend. She says, I go to... Oh, let me try that again.
I go to Disney World. I pay with credit card.
She says, I get to go with my niece and nephew to Walt Disney World in October. We are spending at least 4 days there. The kids are 13 and 12, and it will be their first time there. What are some tips and things we can't miss specifically for preteens? Also, I've never been to Animal Kingdom, and it's been years since I've been to Magic Kingdom. I'd love some ideas on places to eat and things we shouldn't miss. Keep up the great work on the podcast. I love it, and Jeremy is my favorite.
Aww.
Yeah, okay.
That ain't on there.
No, it's not. But she is.
She didn't say she loves our podcast. Just kidding.
So she's going on a trip in October.
How long is the trip? 4 days, 3 nights? What is it?
Oh, did it say?
She said at least 4 days. They're talking about maybe doing a fifth.
Okay.
By the way, first off, going in October, perfect choice.
Oh, yeah.
Because not going to be too hot, not going to be too crowded.
So you think. All you need is a light jacket.
Well, it will be warm. Don't get me wrong. Don't think it's going to be, you know, 30 degrees, but it won't be.
I just got chill. You saying that?
Oh, I had the power of suggestion.
I forgot what 30 degrees felt like.
But it's going to be, you know, decent weather. So good choice, October. But the first question was, she's going with the children. They are 13 and 12. What are some tips slash things we can't miss specifically for preteens?
Well, sadly, the Radio Disney cruise at Animal Kingdom is no longer.
I'm just thinking, cancel the trip.
Why even go?
You know what their interests are. So, you know, don't just assume, and then you're not going to do this, but don't just assume that they're going to like whatever it seems that preteens should like. You know, if they like, if the girl, there's a girl and a boy, right?
Yes. Yeah.
If the girl likes Frozen, or if the boy likes Frozen, you know, I like Frozen, or whatever, and they want to spin, well, they might not have that sing-along by then, will they?
Oh, no, that would be tragic.
Yeah. Well, you know, just gauge what they like and, you know, look up things to do in that interest. Two things about going in October that I'm sure these two gentlemen will jump on.
I have it written down. One is food, one is wine. I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. No, that's one in itself. That's the combo. The first one is Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party, which these guys have been to twice.
Yeah. I've been many times.
I've been once. It is wonderful. Now, it is an additional ticket cost.
But well worth it because you can get into the Magic Kingdom. The party is from 7 to midnight, but you can actually get into the Magic Kingdom with that ticket at 4 p.m.
Yes.
So if you get there right at 4, you almost cannot, if you plan it right, I know you said you might add a fifth day. If you do that for your fifth day, it's cheaper than a normal entrance.
Not adding a day.
Well, no. If you add a fifth day, that's like $10.
No, but what it can do for your trip is optimize it.
Yes.
You know, because you're going to have 4 or 5 days, which is for a first-time visit, trying to see as much as you can see might be a little daunting. But when you add that onto it, that might be the perfect time to explore the Magic Kingdom in a more relaxed setting. Plus, it's tons more magical than it even normally is with the lighting and the music and all the parades and the fireworks.
Well, and if your children are not, I shouldn't call them children, they're 12 and 13. If your preteens are not
we call them students
in the mud.
They're students.
These students are not stick in the muds like Matt and Derek. They can enjoy dressing up. You can actually dress up in costumes.
No,
for that
we're
Halloween
just grown
party.
Adults.
Grown adults dress up too.
Another tip along those lines is if you're not going to the Halloween party, definitely look at the dates of the Halloween parties and don't go to Magic Kingdom on that day because you'll have to leave by 7.
But here's what I have discovered is no matter what age anyone is, once you go to the Magic Kingdom, the nostalgia kicks in, no matter what age. So for them, their nostalgia may be, I mean, gosh, they're what, born in 2002? So their nostalgia is going to be way
nostalgia?
Different.
Nostalgia? That's copyrighted, I think.
Their nostalgia is going to be way different than your nostalgia, but they will tap in somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
To Winnie the Pooh or to something from their childhood, and they will melt into that. So don't think, oh, this is kiddie. They're not going to like it, because it will all of a sudden draw them back to being 3 years old and watching that television show, and they will have a meltdown and become a super freak fan.
Or they won't. They might hate it. I mean, there's honestly, they might hate it. People hate Disney World
some
for some reason.
Some people do. But
secondly, I'm sorry.
I don't think they will.
Secondly, I said Mickey's not so scary. Secondly, Derek had already jumped onto it. So do you want to speak about the food and wine festival that'll be going on at Epcot during that time?
You go for it.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a food and wine festival, and it occurs at Epcot.
That is true.
One, no, one half of Epcot, as you can listen to our podcast and understand, and one half is Future World, and that's with all the Mission Space, Soarin', Test Track, so on. The other side is World Showcase, and that's where the International Food and Wine Festival is. And so in addition to all the countries that are already there, Mexico, China, Germany, Italy, America, Japan, Morocco, France, UK, Canada.
Good job. Right?
Good job, yeah. In addition to those that are
the African outpost.
The African outpost, sorry. Nigeria and Kenya and
Egypt.
Angola, Egypt, Libya,
stop.
So forth. Madagascar.
Ooh.
Niger.
South Nigeria. Africa.
Okay, so in addition to all of those countries that are always there, and they will have booths that represent their cultures and food as well, there are additional places that will be represented, like Brazil and Korea and...
Florida.
Oh, there's a Florida one, isn't there?
There is.
Yeah. The Smokehouse.
A smokehouse, there's a Hawaiian one, and all these places will serve kind of like tapas, little small samples of food, and that would be great if they're foodies. You know, if they don't like adventurous foods, probably not the thing to do with them.
Well, but there's so many booths, though.
If they don't like it, you'll find the chicken nuggets.
You don't want to go to the Food and Wine Festival and eat, like, I don't know, a
hot dog.
Yeah, you don't want
that.
Whoa,
that was weird.
You know, you want to go and be adventurous with it. So if they don't want to do that, you know, don't.
And if they do like it, then go there when they first open at 11, something, get your lunch, and then go back to Future World, and then come back in the evening and get your dinner.
I think we might can all throw out places that you have to eat.
Well, these were my two tips. One was Fast Pass, the thrill attractions, because I'm just thinking of where I was when I was 12 and 13, and it was all about the thrill. So I would want a Fast Pass Tower of Terror, Expedition Everest, Space Mountain, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, Test Track, all those. And then you can do the classics in between, like Jungle Cruise, Small World, Haunted Mansion. Yeah. My other one was about food. And I thought if they don't want to spend a lot of money, like if they're not going to do the dining plan or whatever, it still is really neat to have at least one sit-down restaurant. And that's where these kids are old enough to know what they like. So maybe have some sort of guidebook or send them online where they can look at all the restaurants and let them pick one place they want to go to, like the Sci-Fi Dine-In Theater or the 50s Primetime Cafe.
Or tell them to Google, like, popular Disney World restaurants, top 10 Disney restaurants, and pick some they want to go to. I would just go ahead and suggest outright.
Yeah.
Ohana.
Absolutely.
At Disney's Polynesian Village Resort.
If you're looking for more interactive dining, 50s Primetime Cafe would be at the top of my list in Hollywood Studios. Whispering Canyon, which is Derek's favorite at the Wilderness Lodge.
Hoop-de-doo Review.
Hoop-de-doo Review. I've never been, but I want to
go. Oh, it's fabulous.
So those are more interactive, more play with the waiter.
And all of these are not confined to the parks. So don't think you're confined to the parks to have to eat in every night. It's fun to get maybe it's fun to get on a boat at the Magic Kingdom and travel out to the Wilderness Lodge or over to the Polynesian, take the monorail, and actually get away from the parks and the hustle and bustle, take a nice dinner, and then come back for, you know, whatever.
The restaurant at the top of my list was actually Via Napoli, because in my mind, preteens, A, love pizza. And also, it's kind of a good way to save money, because if there are five or six of you, you can just get one or two pizzas for the whole group and enjoy that. So
yeah. And they good pizza.
They have a pizza there that is like a cookie sheet. Like, it's as big as a cookie sheet.
They're huge.
And I was at the Epcot there with some friends. I won't say their names because I think they listen and they'd be embarrassed that I'd share in the story. But we were like, we're kind of hungry, y'all. Let's get, well, how big is the large? Okay, we'll get that. And then it came and we were all like, oh, there's no way we could eat this. And child, we tore that down. It was gone. Yeah. And we all sat back when it was gone and we were like,
I've only eaten there once. I got the prosciutto melon pizza.
Oh.
It had like cantaloupe and prosciutto on it. It was delicious.
Yeah, I could have guessed that.
Yeah. Cantaloupe. I didn't say what kind
that's
of melon.
True.
It could
that's
have been
true.
Honeydew.
That's true.
Honeydew, watermelon, cucumber.
All right, let's move to the second part of the question. She said they haven't been to Animal Kingdom or Magic Kingdom in a long time. What are some places they shouldn't miss?
Okay, Animal Kingdom, we talked about actually in our last show. So you probably got a little bit about Animal Kingdom. But clearly the must-dos at Animal Kingdom, dinosaur.
Yes.
Primeval World.
No.
Stop.
Yeah, that's a fun...
That is
thrill.
Not
stop.
A
that
not,
is not a
miss.
Must. No, I love Primeval World, but I rode the exact same ride at the county fair last year.
Oh.
But if you're with preteens who want thrills,
hey,
that's
but
a good
no,
thrill.
But I was reading about Joe Rohde, and he said that the scratches on the cars are consistent with, I don't know.
That is not how I talk.
I wasn't mocking your voice. I was mocking your mentality.
My sentiment.
I I was going to say Kilimanjaro Safaris. That's a must.
Yes.
Now, if they're 12 and 13, that means they came of age around the time of Finding Nemo.
Came
so
of
Finding
age.
Nemo. Well, as a child.
Okay.
I don't even know
Emily
why
Dickinson.
Jane Austen.
They came of age at the time of Finding Nemo.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. Puberty is what it means. They're probably not even there yet.
They was born. Around the time that Finding Nemo...
I know it doesn't mean that.
Anyways, they may enjoy Finding Nemo the musical.
No.
They will enjoy it.
I mean, I like it. They won't
enjoy
it.
They're not going to enjoy it.
If nothing else, Terry, your mother will, I promise.
No, and, let's just keep this simple. Expedition Everest is a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Kilimanjaro Safaris, and it's a good roller coaster. Kilimanjaro Safaris is what it sounds like, but it's a very Disney-fied version of like your local, you know, go out on the hayride and see the bulls and the zebras, but it's a Disney version and it's a very
bulls
good.
Bulls and zebras.
Well, you know,
you're
like
seeing like African animals. You're not seeing cows.
No,
in the
I'm
pasture.
Saying it's the Disney version of that local version.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you go down to like South
Where did
Carolina.
You grow up?
Well, we always went down to this little place that had a safari tour. You got in like a church van with no windows in it. And they drove you around their little pasture, and there was like
there's
zebras and giraffes.
We did not have that.
No, Kilimanjaro Safaris is excellent, mm-hmm. and it's just Animal Kingdom. And you're going to see animals. You might not see all of them, but you're going to see elephants and rhinos, and it's just very Animal Kingdom. And then there's dinosaur. I would say those three do not miss.
And there's some trails. Again, I'm thinking about 12 and 13-year-olds. There's trails that you can walk on to burn some energy to see animals, you know, kind of a thing, tigers and gorillas.
There's also Cali River Rapids in Asia.
Yes, if you want to get wet.
Well, it's the good thing about 12 and 13-year-olds is they're probably old enough to kind of walk around the park. So if there is something you want to do that they don't necessarily want to, you say, go find something to do, meet me back here in an hour.
Yep.
And their parents are probably going to need that time too, to be honest.
Now, at the Magic Kingdom, which you said you haven't been to in a long time. Obviously, some of the don't miss things are your Three Mountains, Splash Mountain and Splash Mountain and Big Thunder Mountain, which are both in Frontierland, and then Space Mountain, which is in Tomorrowland. In addition, I would just recommend three classics that you don't want to miss. My personal all-time favorite, Pirates of the Caribbean. My second all-time favorite, The Haunted Mansion. And I'm going to even say the Jungle Cruise, just because...
At night.
I mean, they will make fun of it. Your teenagers will, your preteens. They'll make fun of it, and they probably won't like it. But it's just not to be missed because it's Disney classic.
I'm gonna piggyback on that and say it's a small world as well.
Oh yeah, yeah.
How
of course.
Can you go to the Magic Kingdom without?
It's the kind of thing that they're gonna like be shooting themselves in the head because of the song and everything and the cuteness of it. But that's part of the fun of it.
Yeah,
is you want to shoot yourself in the head.
I would say don't estimate the power of a good nighttime show. Watch Wishes, watch Celebrate the Magic, the awesome projection show that's right before it. Do not miss Fantasmic. The nighttime shows, I've never met anyone who does not like those after having seen them.
No, right, right.
And what I would do, this is me, I would sit down with the youngins. Is that what you say where you're from, Matt, youngins?
I'm from here.
Oh, that's true. I would sit down and ask them, what are some of your favorite Disney films? And let them kind of dialogue a little bit. What's some films they haven't seen? Maybe name out something like Beauty and the Beast. Something that seems so, I mean, how could anybody never see that? But you have to remember if they've born in the last 12 years, you know, they may.
I get nervous about this generation, though. You ask them what their favorite films are. Bolt. Sorry, he's not there.
Bolt.
Air Bud, or like Santa Paws.
That is true. But just make sure they haven't missed some of the classics that you know are going to be in the park, like Little Mermaid, like Beauty and the Beast, like Aladdin. And take maybe some time as a family pre-trip to
have a movie night. I don't believe in pre-trip. I'm mid-trip.
Theology joke. Take a little time to enjoy a film together, you know, movie night, and watch some of these classics. And that will not only refresh, but also get you in the mood. Exactly.
Get a Disney countdown app on your on your smartphone, tablet, whatever. I'm going to say foundationally, Terry, and I cannot stress this enough, for your sanity, your well-being, your health, get up in the morning, go to the park, get the heck out of Dodge by noon. Or, well, maybe one or two, you know, unless you want to see the afternoon parade at the Magic Kingdom at 3, which is great. Get out of there. Go back to your resort for 1 or 2 hours. Don't think you're wasting your time.
Get in the pool.
Go to the pool. Exactly. Go to the little beach bar down by the pool and have a drink, if that's your kind of thing. Relax by the pool. Go take a nap. Get ready and then go back refreshed for the evening, because the crowds and the weather are nicer in the morning and the evening. The afternoon time, I guarantee, is when 90% of the meltdowns occur. So you want to avoid the meltdown. So take that advice. 5 days, take a break in the afternoon, and you won't regret it.
Yeah, well, I think we've given her plenty to think on over the next 4 or 5 months.
You can also just text Derek, you know.
That's true. This is our faithful listener, Terry, who actually was a guest on the show about 15 episodes ago, if you remember.
After your trip, we want you to come back on the podcast and talk about it.
For sure.
We have to have a conference about that first.
Okay.
I'm just thinking.
All right, well, if you have any questions or comments you'd like to send those to comments@madchatters.net, where you can also find us online, madchatters.net. You can find us on Twitter @madchatter, so talk to us over there, too. And I think that's all for this episode of the Mad Chatters podcast.
We are now on Periscope. So those of you who know what Periscope is, follow us. Some live streaming from the parks. We will be there. If you have any requests that you want to see live stream from the parks, let us know. We'll try to accommodate as best we can. But follow us.
Sounds great. Sounds like a good place to end, too. So see you next week.
That's right. Take a little time to find the magic in every day.
Bye-bye now.